G'day and welcome to Macca's Podcast. I love the scope of our program, anything and everything. If you want to get in touch with Australia, this is the place to do it. Settle back and join the Australian phone box. See you on the road.
Get on with it, Macca.
G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, g'day, Ann. Dave Mitchell from Nhulunbuy. How are you?
G'day, Dave. I'm good. I'm good. What's happening, mate?
You're up early.
Yeah, I know. You're up even earlier. What's happening, mate?
Oh, look, there's plenty going on up here, mate. I just wanted to have a ring and just say hello to our friends at Tomago Aluminium Smelter in New South Wales there.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very sad when jobs get exported to China like that, and it happened here, and, you know, it's a big shame.
Is that closing or has closed?
They're still exporting bauxite from up here, and Tomago's under threat of closure. It appears that ever since the government allowed Chinese to take 19% control of Rio Tinto, they've done nothing else but export jobs to China.
Well, that's the... Yes, that seems to be what's happening around the place, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, we people go offshore, manufacture offshore, and I suppose maybe it's cheaper. I don't know what the story is. That's their bottom line, I suppose, Dave, is it?
Well, make no mistake, they'll burn coal to make the aluminium and to make the alumina, and also they'll subsidise that coal, and they'll force their workers to work for, you know, as Gina says, a dollar a day. So, you know, we're in a pretty uncompetitive market. Unless we start to look after ourselves a bit better, our grandchildren are going to really suffer from this.
How many smelters, aluminium smelters, do we have in Australia?
I think we've got two, and I think we're about to have. We might have two. I think there's one at Bell Bay. There used to be one in Victoria, and there was one in New South Wales.
Mm. That's the Tomago one.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad. And Macca, you said this morning about the music that you're playing. I really enjoyed that young lady the other week. You said it was unusual and you warned us all it was unusual, but gee, it was enjoyable.
Yeah. Her name, what's her name again? I'm just trying to think.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah. No, I haven't heard from her since. I mean, she had one little thing out there, a little CD I think she put out with a couple of tracks on it. And that's the last I heard from her. I met her in Tamworth. She was in Tamworth.
Oh, yeah.
But that was, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe. And they come and go. And sometimes they just record for a little while and then they find something else to do and they move on. Music's a bit like that these days, whereas it's fairly ephemeral. That is, it doesn't last that long and they move on and do something else. But anyway,
we're still rocking along up here with King Stingray. I'll tell you, I tipped you those a couple of years ago.
That's right.
Just gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, so they're doing well. I hear about them all the time. And how's things up there? You're pretty warm up there now, aren't you?
Very, very warm. It'll get a lot warmer before it's finished. But we haven't had much rain. But in the dry season, it's beautiful here, and it's probably the premier place and climate in Australia at that particular time. And, you know, we're welcoming all tourists because, you know, we really need a financial base here.
Yeah.
And the Yolngu people of East Arnhem Land have really got together and started some great industries and started to really service that tourist industry. So if people do come up here, they'll be very, very well looked after and they'll get a genuine Australian Aboriginal experience.
All right, Dave. Good on you, mate, and good luck to Tomago. Let's hope.
And look, can I just say thanks to your backroom people? They do a terrific job every week, and I know I've seen how they operate. And
I know
they're like a well-oiled Singer sewing machine, if you ask me.
That was a while ago, wasn't it? We were up there. When was it? When we were up there in Nhulunbuy?
I had the book out the other day, and I think it was before the year 2000. You left a book up here. It had a poem that I read every now and again for a good laugh called The Yakadanda Panda.
Oh, The Yakadanda Panda. Yeah. So it might have been 1999. Yeah, you reckon?
It was about 95 or 99, I think.
Yeah, it would be 99.
I got grandchildren in the meantime, so.
All right, Dave, good on you, mate.
All the best, mate. See you later.
See you, mate. Bye. Andrew's Maxville. Is that right, Andrew?
Yeah, just south of Maxville, a little place called Congaranni.
Congaranni, of course. No, I don't. I've been to Maxville many times, but I haven't been to Congaranni.
Well, just a little bit south and west of there, but it's just probably 10 or 15 k's in from the coast.
And what,
very nice area.
What finds you there, Andrew?
I'm shifting cattle at the moment. I've been away for a couple of weeks. And
where have you been?
I've been in Europe, in France, visiting my sister and just having a quick look around.
I thought you were going to say quick croissant and a quick coffee. Although the coffee's not really good in France, is it, apparently? You know, because
it's improving. It's improving. I haven't been for about 7 years, but it was better. And the croissants are still fantastic, as is all the bread over there. Look, I just thought I'd give you a quick call because while I was over there, I just stumbled across one of the war cemeteries that the Americans run. It wasn't planning on seeing them, but just went there with my wife, and it was just absolutely stunning, very solemn and beautiful. But it sort of just brought it all home, the contrast between what happened in the 39 to 45 and what's happening now with America and where Europe stands, and it's just incredible. But
you can't really
place to visit.
Yeah, you can't really understand the world now, can you? I mean, I suppose you can.
Well, that's exactly right. Exactly right. You can't. I mean, you can't turn your back on history, but no. It's quite amazing what they achieved over there.
Yeah.
And everyone in Europe so grateful to what America did, and now you see what's happening, and it's it just leaves you wondering, doesn't it?
Well, it's Europe's just a strange place. I mean, I know they're United Europe, but they're all making their own arrangements. You'd think they'd there's strength in unity, isn't there? And there's none in disunity, if you know what I mean.
No, strength in numbers.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's the way they should play it. Anyway, Andrew, say you're out moving. You're up early.
I'm up disgracefully early because I can't sleep, and I haven't seen my cattle for a couple of weeks, so I thought I'd better go and see what trouble they've caused, they have, of course.
Yeah. Well, but, they might give you a nice friendly moo and say...
There's been a bit of that, but I think it's more of the complaining nature of where have you been and why haven't got a new paddock, so I'm just changing paddocks so they'll be happy for a couple of days. But good.
That's a nice thing to do, to go to France, Andrew. Half your luck, I reckon, mate.
Yeah, no, it's lovely, and I thoroughly recommend it, especially when you go outside the peak periods. It wasn't too busy, which was good, and we got to the coast, saw Normandy, and there's a beautiful place called Mont Saint-Michel. I hope I pronounced it correctly, but it's basically just a church and a monastery on an island just off the shore of Normandy, which is absolutely spectacular. I don't know how it survived the war and the invasion, but fantastic.
And where was the cemetery you saw, the American cemetery?
In Normandy. I can't remember exactly what the little town was. I was getting a little bit lost at that stage driving a car, but
so that's
something like 14 cemeteries.
So that's as a result of the D-Day and things, where they got slaughtered.
Yeah. From what I understand, after the war, about 1949, the French government ceded some land in various places, 14 or 15 places, and the Americans buried a lot of their war dead, especially, there'd be hundreds that weren't even identified, and they've got lots of crosses and Stars of David for all those young men who died, especially... during the invasion, D-Day invasion.
I just can't imagine. I don't know why they just didn't bomb it and bomb it and bomb it till there was nothing left. But they just got mowed down, didn't they? Getting out of those. I mean, I just and you would wonder why they just don't embrace America, because America saved. Well, when you look at it, it saved all our bacon, really, in the Pacific and everywhere. You know, and all those young men fought and took all those islands in the Pacific and. Carnage everywhere, unbelievable. I just
100%, 100%. Yeah, no, it was just an incredible effort, So,
and all
that's about it. That's all I had to say.
We'll say good day to the steers and the beef, and I'll see you in.
I think about it, can I just I had a small spill on a motorbike out near Menindee a few months ago, and can I just say a quick shout out to Amanda and all the lovely nurses at Menindee District Hospital, and he's probably not listening; he'd be in bed. But if Fuji's there, he's one of the flying doctor pilots. Say good day to him,
Andrew.
That would be a big favour.
Were you going too fast, or what was the story on your bike? What happened?
No, it was pathetic. I was just going in a straight line. Wasn't even speeding. I was doing about 80 k's on a dirt road, and which I've ridden on 1,000 times before, and hit a patch of bulldust. And by the time I realised, it was getting a little bit.
You were airborne.
I was airborne. Yeah. So But anyway, they put me back together again. So big thanks to the Royal Flying Doctor and all the. All the medical staff at Menindee and Broken Hill Hospital.
And what's the name of the little place? Good on you. Yeah, what's the name of the little place you're at again?
Congarini.
Congarini. Good on you. Thanks, Andrew.
All right. Okay.
See ya.
Macca.
Bye.
Bye.
G'day. This is Macca.
Hello.
Yeah, g'day.
Hello. Becky from Bell Reeve in Tasmania.
Sorry, your name is?
Betty. Yes.
How are you, Betty?
Very good. All the better for talking to you, Macca. I listen every Sunday morning. You make my entire week.
Right. And what's the story, Bet?
I'm just out having my early morning walk. I'm a bit late anyhow. It's a beautiful 10 degrees down here and going to about 25. So it's going to be a beautiful day in Tassie. Yeah, my son drove up and from Maroochydore to see you in Noosaville a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, right, yeah, we were there, yeah, it was a good time.
So I enjoyed that and the rain and all. And, I only listen till 9 because I go off on my motorbike.
Oh, do you? You ride your, you go for a burn on the bike?
Too right, yeah, I've got a three-wheeler, Can-Am Spider now. Got 260,000 on it, kilometres.
Jeez.
Yeah, been to Darwin, been everywhere, and a bit like you, Macca.
Yeah, well, you could still listen. You could listen on your little headphones while you're driving if you want.
I could, but, yeah, I've just, I've gone far enough for my age. I'm thoroughly modern listening to you through the earphones.
How old are you, Betty?
Only a young 80.
And you're still riding your motorbike, eh?
Yes, and organise our rides for the Ulysses Club and, yeah, tell all the big fellas where to go. And
well, good on you. And so a nice morning in Bell Reeve this morning, I'd say it is.
Absolutely beautiful. Free of the wind. And, it's just a gorgeous morning.
All right. Good on you. We had a call this morning, said there's a beautiful sunrise in Northern Hobart, and that's where you are sort of really, isn't it?
Yeah. All right. Some beautiful ones. Thanks a lot, Macca.
Good on you, Betty. Thanks for call.
Bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. This is Ernest.
Hi, Ernest.
I'm currently on the Newell Highway between Jerilderie and Narrandera, and I'm taking a vintage car up to a chap who bought it off me in Queensland. But I thought you'd just like to know, I've just got back from a driving tour in Spain, and I just wanted to let you know or reiterate to people just how lovely it is driving in Australia compared with the endless roundabouts and mountain passes and narrow roads in Spain. It's just lovely cruising up the Newell.
Well, see, I would have thought there'd be plenty of open highways in Spain because it's a pretty big country, isn't it?
Yeah, look, there are a lot of motorways, but we try to avoid some of the big cities because the tourism is just over the top. And so we stayed rural and saw some wonderful, went through the Pyrenees and that sort of country, but very narrow roads and, had to keep my wits about me the whole time. And I was just thinking this morning, listening to you, and I'm just cruising along with a trailer and a vintage car on the back and the sun's coming up, and I thought, how lovely is this country?
What sort of car is on your trailer? What sort of car is it, vintage?
It's an Alvis, A-L-V-I-S, very rare English brand, built in Coventry in England. And I am a member of the Elvis Car Club in Victoria, and I've got access to another car which I use on rallies. So I put this one on the market, and the chap in Gympie bought it off me.
Yeah.
And he's paying me to drive it to Queensland, which is not a hardship when I'm just cruising up the road.
And you said you pronounce it Elvis, but it's spelt with an A, is it? Is it Elvis or Elvis? Elvis.
A for Apple, A-L-V-I-S. They were built in Coventry in England.
Mm.
Pre-war, they were a very prestigious car up there with Bentley and Lagonda and the like. And then in the war years, like a lot of British firms, they went into military production. So producing armoured vehicles and tanks and aircraft engines. And they continue to do that to this day. And they, because of that being so profitable, they got out of cars in the 50s.
There you go. Now, Ernest, you said tourism in Spain is over the top.
Yes, there's actually a minor sort of backlash. There's so many people holiday in Spain these days throughout Europe that it's just, in Barcelona, for example, and trying to go to something like the cathedrals, it's very, very difficult and, crowded, and I, as I said to you, I'm just appreciating the open road here in Australia.
On the Newell. Yes. Look out for kangaroos, but yes, you'll just take it steady and revel in the freedom of Australia while it lasts.
Oh, it's beautiful. People need to tour a lot more. One of the things I was showing photographs to people in Spain of when you cross the Nullarbor and all you can see is the horizon, the ground and the sky, and a line across the front of the windscreen, and you can drive some of the back roads of Australia and not see anybody almost all day, and they don't believe you.
Good on you, Ernest. Great to talk to you, mate.
Yeah, thank you.
Safe travel. Bye.
This is the All Over News.
It sure is the All Over News, and as you know, I need to get out and about because I get to meet people, whether it's at an outside broadcast, in a concert, wherever. People come to say g'day, like my next guest, Dennis Yagmich. I met him in Perth. He's a vigneron, an accountant, a former World Series and Sheffield Shield cricketer. You'll enjoy our discourse about cricket, Ian Chappell, university education, work, life, and just living. I'm in Perth. I'm talking to Dennis Yagmich. How are you, Dennis?
I'm very well indeed. Thanks, Ian. Great to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. What's your story? What do you do?
Well, I'm a vigneron plus an accountant by profession. I played a bit of World Series cricket and cricket for West Australia and South Australia over the years back in
the 70s. So that's in the 70s?
And back in the 70s, yeah.
That was a wild old time, apparently.
Well, it was a bit of a wild time in a way, but we were amateurs those days. There was no payment as the boys are getting these days. It's quite something to sort of...
Well, they got some pay, didn't they?
Well, we did get a little bit, but I think I was paid $45 for a Shield game here, and that was it for 4 days. But I got a rise when I went to South Australia. It was $65 a game.
And Yagmich is from where? What's that originally?
Well, we're originally from Croatia, the Dalmatian coast. My grandparents came out in 1911, and that was one grandfather, and mum's father came out in 1922.
How did you get involved in cricket?
I was very fortunate in that I lived opposite the Horton Vineyard, where Jack Mann, Tony Mann and his family were the winemakers. I, as a youngster at 5 or 6 years of age, used to go across the road and play cricket with them on their veranda, and there's a big story to that. Tony Mann was a test cricketer. You've probably heard of Tony.
But yeah, of course.
I grew up with Tony, and Tony was my captain at Midland Guildford for a number of years, and I started with Midland at 16 years of age and carried on.
Did you get to meet Kerry Packer?
Unfortunately, I didn't meet Kerry Packer. I only sat about four seats away from him in the Sydney Cricket Ground when David Hooks was hit in the mouth. I'm frightened, really, of meeting him because he looked at me a few times.
Well, his reputation preceded him, apparently. So someone said about me, but anyway, go on.
You know, it was probably a disappointment that I didn't really get to meet him, but, you know, I was in the second 11 side, didn't play in the first 11 side, of course, but it was a wonderful experience.
What did you do?
Cutting edge. Yeah. I was a wicketkeeper.
Uh-huh.
And I came.
How's the knees?
My knees are very good. A lot of people say to me, how come you're still sort of walking okay without any replacements? But I think it's all the vineyard work that I've been doing over the years has been giving me some good exercise.
Yes, tell me about the vineyard. We've heard all about the wines and the ups and downs, and then there was China last year or the year before. How's it been? It's a wild ride.
Yeah, well, it has been quite a wild ride. I mean, with the Chinese pulling out the way they did, created a real big glut, but slowly it's being exported again. But the wine industry is sort of suffering quite a lot, I think, because of the it added costs to manufacturing, and you know, there's not a lot of people around now of sort of younger generation that really want to do the work that's needed. I've got people from the Pacific Islands coming to work for me on my vineyard now, and you know, locals just don't want to seem to do the work.
That's a common complaint. I talk to people in all sorts of industries.
It's unfortunate that that's the case, and I think unfortunately a lot of the youngsters are just not encouraged to do those sorts of, you know, manual tasks. I mean, to me, it was something that I just wanted to carry on from my father. His father was a wine producer and grape grower, his father before him. So, you know, we've gone along for quite a number of years and decades just doing what we've done for probably 300-400 years. I'm a little bit critical of the education department. Everybody wants to send their kids to university and learn sort of subjects that really aren't going to be of any great benefit to them in the future, you know.
Go to uni for your accountancy?
No, I went to night school. I did technical college studies. It took me a few extra years to do that, but, you know, I worked out on the vineyard and had a job as well as soon as I left school. Didn't really pursue, you know, university at all, because I knew that what I wanted to do was what I've achieved to that. I knew that I wanted to sort of be an accountant, and I wanted to get there eventually, and I had to do it of an evening and through technical college. So, you know, it took a little bit of extra, but I think it was the determination. And it was the same as playing cricket, really. It was just determination, you know. There's been a lot of guys that have played a lot of first-class cricket over the years that have had limited ability, but it's dedication, perseverance, and, you know, it all comes from the heart. As I say to a lot of young kids that I coach from time to time, look, you know, it's all very well having good ability, but, you know, you've got to have it in the heart as well to get to another level. It's a very important exercise to be able to sort of, you know, set your goals and say, that's what I want to do, but you've got to have it in your heart.
Whenever I come here to Western Australia and to Perth, I just love it. It's like coming to a new country, because I like the garden and I love the plants, and it's just a different place. And everything. I think, why don't I live here, or... Yeah. Something like that. Tell me about you and West and the West. You came here because your parents came here, or?
Well, yes, I came. I mean, my grandparents came, and then my dad came out when he was 13 years of age, and Mum was born here, but both of Croatian parents. But we had the vineyard, and I wanted to take over from the vineyard. But for me, cricket came along. You know, I was second fiddle to Rod Marsh here, and I had three or four games for West Australia. And unfortunately, everybody said, look, you're wasting your time here. You're not going to play regularly, so go east. And I went east, and I went to New South Wales and had a talk to Brian Tabor. And Tabsy sort of, well, he was a very nice man.
And it's Tabsy. Doug Ford and Steve Rickson, all those wicketkeepers were falling out of trees, as my mate says.
That's right, they were. Indeed. I think Tabsy sort of discouraged me away not to go to New South Wales, because they had enough keepers there. So I called in at South Australia on the way back, and South Australia said, yeah.
Barry Jarman.
Barry Jarman was there, yeah. And but Les Favell, I knew, you know, reasonably well. And
played for St George.
Did he really?
Yes,
I didn't know that. Les was another import to South Australia. Mm. And so I went across to South Australia and played there for 5 years. Had Ian Chappell as my captain for 1.5
What was he
years.
Like as a captain? Rugged?
He was brilliant. Oh, you know, Ian was sort of, you know, you didn't sort of try and get offside with Ian. I mean, he was a man. He
like
was,
Kerry Packer.
he was a man's man, and I mean, he was a brilliant captain. I've played under a few first class captains. To me, Ian was sort of number one. If you did well, Ian really appreciated it, and if you sort of slacked off, you know, he'd have something to say. But successful people have to be hard, and you know, Ian was a hard player, and I've got a lot of admiration for him, and I'm disappointed with some of the criticism that he gets from time to time, but I think a lot of that criticism comes about by the fact of people being envious in a way.
Yeah, I think so too. Getting back to the original point about Western Australia, I don't know, it's just completely different from the east to come over to the west. Yeah. There's something, I don't know if it's in the air or the sky or what it is, I don't know, but it just gets to me.
No, I think it's just the isolation that we've had, really, and people have... It's been like a huge community, really. You know, it's a great feeling to have camaraderie here, and although it's just getting too big now, I mean, you know, the places, you know, you just drive around now and, you know, your roadblocks everywhere, and, you know, it's just too many people.
Come over to Melbourne or Sydney and see what you... see here you go,
Dan. No, thank you. Adelaide I loved. I mean, Adelaide's a great place. I mean, if ever I was going to go anywhere else, you know, it would be Adelaide. I mean, to me, it had the same sort of vibe as Perth. Much more conservative in their outlook. It's probably because it was a free colony. I mean, we were a colony.
Don't knock the convicts. Don't knock the convicts.
I won't, because they did a lot of contributions.
They built the place.
They did indeed. But we only had them for about 10 years, I think, something like that, in the 50s when they couldn't support themselves. But to me, you know, Perth has been, you know, it's a great place to live, and regardless of, you know, the population increasing, it always will. Populations are increasing everywhere.
Yeah. Dennis, great to meet you. Thanks for saying g'day.
Thank you, Ian.
Did you enjoy the music?
I did indeed. It was
good
wonderful.
On you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
indeed.
You. I'm talking to Tricia Flannery. She's an author, amongst other things, children's books. When did you start writing, Trish?
I started writing 4 years ago, during the middle of COVID.
That's a late start.
It is a very late start. I've been told I should have started earlier, but things don't always come to you instantly. It takes a few years. I'm 18 next year, so it takes a bit of, when you self-publish, getting something out there.
Oh, it's very hard, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
very difficult.
The book you're showing me now, The Adventures of the She-Oak Critters.
Casuarina tree. We have a 70-acre property up here at Mangrove Mountain. It is full of casuarinas. Mm. I had a dried flower business many years ago, and so I was very interested in all the nuts and cones, and I thought, oh, I could do something with these. The characters just came to me. So some things just happened like that. So they do a little adventure down from our dam, down the creek to the Hawkesbury River at Spencer. We use real photos in the books. Local people give me their photos, and I take a lot of photos myself. So they see all the animals, flora and fauna, on their way down. Do everything safe for children from about 4 to 10-year-olds, like reading the books.
Lots of children's books. Why did you write a children's book?
I know. When I wrote them, everybody came out. All the famous people came out, and here they were advertised on the ABC. They've just written these books, and I thought, damn it. You know, here I am, an unknown person writing children's books. I don't know. I just like the creatures. I like the Australian way of things. Yeah. I had them self-published in Australia, or I refused to go overseas to have them published. So they are published in Australia. It's all Australian. It has to be all Australian. So I find that a lot of people buy them word of mouth to send overseas to expats living in different countries.
The expats get very homesick, apparently.
They do.
They ring me sometimes.
Yes, I hear them on your radio that they phone. They're more expensive done here. They cost a little bit more, but or a lot more, but it's all Australian, and that's important to me, that they remain in Australia. Everything remains in Australia.
What did you do before? I mean, why do you start writing at, you know, when
at my age?
Well, you know, yeah. Why do you start writing?
I love kids. I love children. So much out there that it's cartoonish. I wanted something that was more
real.
Real. Because they come back and they sit around the fire, they look at the sky, at the stars, and then they can still get on their computers and look up. I know I've done a lot of reading at different libraries, and I asked children, have you gone out to look at this and that? And they said, no, we're not allowed to. It's too dangerous.
Lovely drawings, lovely photos. Beautiful,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, there's some lovely ones in there. I've written 8 more books, but I won't publish them until I get this out. I'm going to do one that goes from the country to the city. We have some fabulous photos that I've got of the Sydney Harbour and the Opera House and the Harbour Bridge, but the Opera House is trademarked.
Everything's trademarked.
Yeah, the Harbour Bridge isn't. The Harbour Bridge isn't, so that's okay. I could use it. There's a lot of journeys that are going to do. The boat turns into a podmobile. and later it becomes a solar-powered aeroplane, so they can travel further distances and do more journeys and show kids what they can do.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I'm thinking about how people talked about the demise of books and the demise of newspapers, and then they said they're coming back, and now I think, I don't know, books aren't the flavour of the month, but kids don't know that, do they?
No, they don't. And I think if you can combine the books and your storytelling with what they can do with the on the computer. I looked up, I've got characters in here from another planet or from future that are called creatures with many eyes, and you look that up and that takes you to Egypt and tells you all about Egypt. So if they can combine what they're reading with a computer, computers are always going to be here. There's so many people writing books at the moment, children's books, that no doubt children are still reading them.
I'm talking to Tricia Flannery. Tricia, Mangrove Mountain.
It is brilliant. We bought the property 46 years ago. We actually came from the Northern Beaches. And a lot of people up here have come from the Northern Beaches to escape.
The Northern Beaches?
Yeah, you escape the Northern Beaches, yes. Actually, the whole area is a very spiritual area. Not that I'm religious, but it is spiritual. And it has a very, it's very peaceful. It's
well,
a
the bush is
spot.
Spiritual, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is. Yeah, it is. It's a great place to live. All our family comes back. Some still live on the Northern Beaches and they come back up here to spend time, bring their friends with them, and that's what it is having people coming and enjoying what you're enjoying. So that's important.
The book's called Adventures of the She-Oak Critters. Tricia Flannery, nice to meet you.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you too.
And look, Peter Dennehy's on the line. Good morning, Pete.
Morning, Macca. How you going?
I'm good. You're in Yak?
Yeah, in Yak, mate. Just got back from the USA yesterday.
Oh, hence you sound a bit jet-lagged. Is that right?
I sort of am a little bit. I'm a little bit disappointed because on the way back, I lost a day. So I left on the 30th of October and I landed here on the 1st of November. So somewhere the universe owes me October the 31st.
Well, and think of all the days that are owed to all the international travellers, Pete. I mean, have you thought about that?
Yeah, well, I got 15 hours of the same day on the way over, but then I lost a whole day on the way back, so I don't know what's going on there.
So where did you go?
I was mostly in Tennessee, North Carolina. So what I did is I sort of bit the bullet and got a work visa, like a three-year, entertainer's visa, basically, an O-1 visa, which actually entitles me to live there for 3 years, but I'm just sort of planning on going over every now and then, little chunks of time, and this was my first time sort of there working, and did some great, got an opportunity to play some really lovely shows and meet a bunch of really great people. So it was just a bit of an experiment to see how my stuff would go over there, and they were great, the crowds.
Yeah, and there's quite a few Aussie musicians over there, aren't there?
Yeah, so the French family were very helpful. They got me a gig at the Station Inn, which is like a real bluegrass and trad country venue in Nashville, a real iconic sort of a venue. So, and I've booked in again there for next year. And Christy Cox has, helped a lot with my visa stuff, and then just met some other people over there. Like, got to meet Larry Cordle, who wrote that song Highway 40 Blues that Ricky Skaggs recorded, and got to sing it with him at the Station Inn.
Really?
Like that, were just really great. And you realise that when you're somewhere else, and it'd be the same for people that come here. But like, I've spoken to Americans that have visited Australia, and they said we just love the people, and that's the reason. You enjoy a place. I think the countryside and everything is gorgeous. Like over there, it's all changing colour at the moment with the autumn leaves. But, it's the people that sort of make a place.
Yeah, I'll say. And I'm assuming there's a lot more music happening over there than there is here.
Yeah, well, I guess, you sort of realise once you're out on the interstate driving around that, they've got more than 10 times our population. So, the concentration of anything is bigger, but the musicians are phenomenal. Like, I saw some kids playing fiddle over there that go, oh man, I wish I could play that well. They're just sort of brought up with it because they've got those, like, I played at the 100th Mountain City Fiddlers Convention And they've got fiddle conventions all over the place over there. So, which is sort of like little music festivals, but they'll have contests for guitar, fiddle, mandolin, banjo, groups and vocal stuff. And yeah, so it's all part of the culture over there. But, you know, like we've got good festivals here. Yak and Dander Folk Festival's a little cracker, and we're very lucky, you know. I'm playing Major's Creek next weekend up near Canberra, so we've got some good festivals.
Yeah, it just seems that, as you say, there's a bigger population over there, more people to watch music and more people to play it, and that has its own rewards in lots of ways, like critical mass, you know, I think, in lots of ways.
Yeah, that's exactly. Have you been there? Have you been over to?
No, I haven't. I haven't been. I'm waiting for an invite. Wait for an invite. You make your own arrangements. Is that the story?
I might need a trombone player, mate.
I'm a trombone owner.
Oh, trombone owner. All right.
I'm not a player. I gave that away some time ago, mate.
Oh well, but no, it's the standard over there is, you know, that's why a lot of people go there, and part of the reason I went there too. It's a really great education and inspiration, and it just sort of puts a firecracker under you to come back and get writing and get practicing. And, you know, I met James Monroe, who was Bill Monroe's son, and, you know, a lot of old sort of legends in the bluegrass scene.
Is it hard to get a green card?
I don't know about the green card, but the visa itself, that was just sort of standard. I think it's sort of difficult for any country. You know, I know people have done it to come here. So, no, it wasn't. It was just a process, that's all. It's just one of those things. There's no sort of quick way about it. You've just got to go through all the forms and jump through all the hoops. And, yeah. So, then I thought, oh, I wonder how it's going to go when I get, you know, getting in there with my passport. I got my stamp and everything in the passport, and it was easy, you know, just a bit of a question. Oh, what are you doing? You here for work? Yep. I said, I'm not going to live here. But I'm here. Oh, okay, all right. Enjoy your day. Off I went. So, and then jump in a car and get on the wrong side of the road, Macca. The moon's upside down there too.
Oh, is it really? Oh, yeah, that'd be right, yeah. So all in all, you had a good time, Pete, and you're going, you're going to go back just once a year or more than that?
That's sort of the plan at the moment. So I'm going back September next year and, with the contacts that I've made this time, sort of set a few things up. So, yeah, it's really good, really good. People were worried before I left saying, oh, they're going to get your songs, they're going to get your jokes and humour and everything, and they got it, you know. Mm-hmm. There was no worries there at all. I just explained the odd word, like if I've got the word dunny in a song. So when you hear the word dunny, it means toilet. That's all I can say. Right. And they like to use the word, you know.
Yeah.
The new word in their vocab.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're a trendsetter. You're leading the vanguard, mate.
I know. I'm a trendsetter there. Oh, yeah. I might get a picture in their dictionary, you know.
Well, you never know, Pete. Well, you sound like you need to have a rest, and people see you when Major's Creek next weekend.
Yeah, that's my next Major's Creek folk. So, thanks a lot, Macca, and love to you, Liam. We might see you in the Big T. Are you going to Tamworth?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm over Tamworth.
Well, it's too cold for you.
No, it's not. Like, did you play, yeah, done a nothing, and did you play that for them? Did you play looking at me phone or looking at me, what do they call it? They don't call it a mobile over there. They call it cell.
Yeah. I don't mean mobile phone in the song anyway. So, yeah, they got the phone song.
Yeah.
They liked sort of done a nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got a song called Quiz Show, which they enjoyed that as well. So that's sort of, that's, I guess, it's sort of Dunno Nothing, sort of, that's universal, I guess. So, but a lot of people came up after and said, oh, that's my son, that's my grandson. That's, you know, same as what I get.
Yeah. Hey, all right, Pete, good on you, mate. Good to talk to you.
You too, Macca. Thanks, mate.
See you, mate. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. This is Jean Davis from Paterson, Queensland.
Uh-huh. How are you, Jean?
Oh, pretty good for an 80-year-old, you know.
Yep. Yep.
I was just ringing up to let people know who have had the new bomb site, which is exactly what it is.
This is the Bureau of Meteorology, yeah, right?
Yes, yeah. You can still get the old one, and I was wanting to give it to people who want to get back onto the old site.
All right, well, tell us.
It's reg.bom.gov.au.
Say it again, reg.bom.gov.au. Right, and this is the old site, is it?
It is.
And it's still there, is it?
It is.
For how long?
I don't know, but I'm using it myself at the moment.
Yeah, well, for those who maybe don't follow the weather, there was a whole lot of controversy about the new Weather Bureau site, wasn't there? And you found it hard to use? People found it hard to use?
Well, you couldn't locate yourself on the map. They've taken away all the geographical and town names, and you can't really locate yourself on it. This, I mean, we can look out and see Mount Kenine, which is where the Gympie radar, weather radar station is.
Yeah.
So I can see that on this map, but I mean, they decided not to put the weather stations on their map.
I wonder who advised them, Jean. I wonder where they got their... It's the same always when there's change, isn't it? And I don't know if they consulted a lot widely, but they probably have enough experts at the bomb. And it's not just the bomb. It's widespread, you know, in any government departments, I think... Or in,
yes.
Anybody who's making change in banks and things like that, and people are bemused and confused often.
They certainly are. And, I mean, at my stage of life, I want to hang on to the old that I can.
Yeah, well, what you know is what you best. You don't want to be learning new things, especially if it's not as good as the old one. So it's reg.bom.gov.au, is that right?
Yes.
And that's the old site, and it's still there. So you can go to that and be confirmed, if you like. Who knows how long it'll stay there?
Yes, I realise that, but I thought if a lot of people could get back onto it, they might be very wary about turning it off.
Yeah, well, there you go. You've told people. I'm sure there's lots of people who listen here who are very particular about their weather and what they get and what they don't get.
Yes.
All right. Yes.
Rightio.
Well, good on you, Jean. Thanks for that. How's things in Paterson, Gympie?
It's a bit overcast, but... And we've had some mighty storms over the last couple of days. But because of this, I've managed to see where they were going.
And you couldn't see that on the new site?
No, you can't, because on the new site, it tends to jump. And I said to my husband, we're looking at it, oh, one of those bloody things don't jump on us.
I was just looking for my weather piece from he had something to say about it this morning, but I've misplaced it. But he basically said what you're saying about the new site. But anyway, we'll follow it up. Good on you, Jean. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. RJ's in Blackburn South. Good morning, RJ.
Good day, Macca. This is KJ from
KJ, Blackburn, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Macca, it's It's going to be 30 degrees or something in Blackburn this morning. Beautiful blue skies. And I'm walking, listening to you. It's exhilarating and pure oxygen. It's unbelievable. The people who come on your show, you know, it's a hot talk. They just don't come and talk sometimes. So brilliant. Mecca, I came here in 1993. We actually were, I left India in 80. I worked in the Middle East, oil and gas, and came to Melbourne in 1993. I got immigration because of qualification. And we thought, where do we go? I thought, oh, I know MCG, we'll go to Melbourne. So we came to Melbourne in recession, but we never looked back. You know, when I came first here, I was Indian, and slowly the small things, you know, you see a Kookaburra, or you go to Great Ocean Drive, you take a ferry, you slowly change and become Australian. And your heart says, this is where I live. I love this place. I support the national team wherever they play. I grieve when a young 17-year-old cricketer dies, and I'm exhilarating when Phoebe Litchfield hits 100. So it's part of being here and part of being this great country. I travel to US, all over Europe. I can tell you, coming back is the greatest pleasure.
That's what a bloke said. Yeah. Another bloke said this morning, he'd been in Spain and he was just driving. He was towing his car. He was towing a car up to sell up in Queensland. And he said he'd been in Spain. He said, you know, compared to that, he said, coming home is it's always great. Coming home is always great, KJ. So how's things how's things for you in Melbourne, Blackburn South?
Oh, it's brilliant. I actually retired and I'm 73, so I picked up a few health issues, but there's so much to do. I've just joined the wood turning class, you know, where the people are so brilliant. I know the small community groups are a small representation of what Australia is, what makes this country great. People are so nice. In all the years of working and living here, I never felt once that, you know, I can't change how I look or my color or whatever, but they never treat you differently. But the developments, I don't know about government policy and immigration, it's all too remote. So recently, I was in a tram and somebody waved a flag and said, go back to your country. I told them, this is my country. I'm here. Where do you want me to go? But it's a few people who have to understand this country is grown. It's what it is today, not by just one set of people, but a huge number of people who come and who have said, this is my country. And, you know, this is where I live. In fact, I went to MCG on Friday for the game. I'm a member. Some of the behavior of the Indian fans is appalling. And I'm saying, hey, what is this? This is an Australian sporting place. You behave, support sport. I don't care who you support, but there's certain unwritten norms. What happens, one Indian bad, all Indians bad is the kind of attitude. So I'm just saying, we have come here, many of us, and we have lived here. We call this our country, and we do believe that this is our country.
Well, exactly. And from my take on you, KJ, you're a great Australian. You could be Australian of the Year. You'd be my Australian of the Year because, and it's true, and we've been in doing programs, say, in Melbourne, you know, 30 years ago, and people come along and they're immigrants from the 50s, from late 40s, maybe the 50s and early 60s, and they came from Europe. And mostly, by and large, people love Australia and they come here and they embrace it and we all embrace it. You know, there's a few bad eggs one thing I will say probably is that, in my opinion, the immigration that's coming into Australia at the moment is too many people. I mean, I'm all for immigration because I think it's great. And I grew up with people from Europe and stuff in our family and from Malaysia and stuff like that. But I'm not sure what the figures are, maybe 400,000 or 500,000. And I think the problem is integrating is getting people houses and fixed up and there's sudden changes in cities. That's, to me, the only problem. And it's like anything. I've always said, if you rush things, doesn't matter what you rush. At home, if you're doing something or whatever, on the big scale, if you're rushing things as a country, you'll find problems, and that's probably the reason why there's a bit of a backlash. But and that's unfortunate, KJ, because as anyone who's been listening here to our program over the years will know that we're all in this together. We're all Australian made, as that as song that Watsy sings. We're all Australian made, KJ, in some sort of way, I'll forgive you for barracking for India when we play cricket.
No, I don't actually. I barrack for Australia and so on. Also, we have a lot of people, my friends, who came here in the 50s, 60s. We often meet. Even I feel of late some of the quality of immigration isn't all that good. You know, it used to be different. Qualified people who can contribute, who can walk in and really lift the game. That's how I came here. I had engineering skills which were not available. I went and became whatever. But it's not the same. So I can see the resentment. Why so many people, and they come here and they start looking at things which there are enough Australians to do. So there is a case for that. But only what my request to all the Australians, fellow Australians, is criticize the immigration policy. Go and analyze it. Blame the government. But don't go beyond that and categorize and say, oh, all Indians are lemons. No,
exactly.
Yeah.
KJ, I hope to get down to Melbourne before Christmas. I'll look you up. We got your number, haven't we?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Well, talk to you soon. Lovely to talk to you, KJ.
Lovely talking to you. And may you live for 100 years and keep us all happy on Sunday morning.
It was a terrible thing with that young boy and who got hit with a cricket ball and.
So sad.
So it was a terrible, terrible. He looked like a lovely young kid, and it reminded everyone of Philip Hughes. And anyway, KJ,
I was listening to the commentary on the day when Philip Hughes got hit, and I thought, what a tragedy! And here it is repeating. We should do something. But have a wonderful day, Mecca.
Good on you, KJ. See you, mate. Bye. Tim's in Mollymook. Morning, Tim.
Hey, Mecca. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, mate. What's happening?
I was just driving home, staying with my daughter for the night up at Kangaroo Valley, Camberwara, and I listening to the lady with the children's books, and I'm a bit of a book nut myself. I've published a few, but I was playing cards with my grandchildren last night. The eldest is 11 years old, and I thought, what a wonderful thing that's been lost to the devices and all that they carry around. These kids don't use devices. Their mother's been really good and kept them away from all that, and they just loved it, playing cards, you know, simple card games and just a normal deck of cards, no tricky stuff. It's great. Really good, really good. And my daughter picked up this book my granddaughter picked up this book and started reading it, and I thought, well, she can read that, she can enjoy cards for the rest of her life. And so I gave her the book, and I came away very satisfied that cards are going to be in their life.
Yeah, well, it always was, wasn't it? Everyone played cards, more or less, all sorts of things, whether it was snap or grab, whatever you call it.
Well, all that, and 500 now, and 21, and prop and cop and all that sort of stuff.
And euchre and all that sort of things,
And it's wonderful. You know, you've got so many stories and so many people you talk to, and they, oh, I love 500. I used to play this with my grandfather and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I think there's got to be a revival. I play a lot of poker myself, but it's just it's tournament poker, but it's on a social scale, and that's what the book's about. But I just find it so fascinating, the lady luck factor.
Yeah, and you learn about all sorts of things when you play cards too. You know, you learn about winning and losing, like in sport or anything like that. But you think the loss of cards is a loss for kids, do you?
Oh, yes, but, you know, it's our responsibility to get them back into it. Or not even get them back into it, make them aware that it's available. That was the fascination I got last night and this morning. We had three cards. There was a queen of hearts, there was a four of clubs, and I think the other one was a seven of something. And within 5 minutes, they'd worked out a game to play amongst themselves with three cards. It was so good. It was so good. So good. I didn't prompt them at all. I didn't even know what game they were playing, but guess this one, multiply by two and all that sort of stuff.
And what about books? Do the kids read?
Oh, yeah, the avid readers, yeah. And that's what I say, the 11-year-old, she picked up this book that I've just written, and she read the introduction and said, oh, let's have a game, you know. It was great.
I hope you hear all sorts of stories, and I'm not about to say whether they are or aren't reading, but it was one of the great joys of life, I think, reading when you're a kid. But and I think kids who miss out on that miss out on a lot.
Well, I think if you could encourage anyone today to go out and buy a deck of cards, and next time you see the grandchildren or your next door neighbour or your mate or whatever, pull it out and have a game of cards.
And you can also learn to shuffle and do card tricks and build card houses, and it's a
house of cards.
It's a one-stop shop, isn't it, really, Tim?
Yeah, Macca. I thank you for taking the time to talk, because I'm a real promoter of cards.
Right. Good on you. Nice to talk to you, Tim. How's the Molly book been?
Gorgeous. Yeah, it's always gorgeous. It's I came out of Canberra there, where my daughter lives, and it was all beautifully foggy and cloudy, and all this, you know, tapestry of visions out the side, and then get in the traffic. And but I particularly like your little session with that lady today with the children's books. It was very good. Thank you for that.
Yeah, Casuarina Critters, I think it was called. Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, she was great, all Australian, blah, blah.
Yeah, getting it published here in Australia, and she wanted to do that. And it's got photos in it too, that's the thing. It's, she didn't want to have cartoon characters. She used a little creatures around her place, you know, there's hedge, you know.
Yeah, that would that's amazing, and particularly if there's a lot of visuals in there. You know, we all learn different ways, whether we read or touch or look at shapes and all that sort of stuff. It's great. Yeah.
All right, Timmy, good on you.
See you, Macca.
See you, mate. Bye. And Cheryl's in the Blue Mountains. Good morning, Cheryl.
Oh, good morning, Macca. First time caller, but I am a diehard racing. I love it. I used to make costumes, and the whole theatre is amazing.
Yeah.
Of the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, did...
One end to the other. But I also follow horses.
Yeah.
Now, my tips for something as big as the Melbourne Cup, or any really big race, but it's got 24 horses.
Yep.
I whittle them down.
Yep.
The track conditions, if it's wet, there will be horses who will not like wet tracks.
Yep.
There will be horses who cannot run past 2,400 metres.
Yep.
So you whittle out anything that cannot stay at least 2,500 metres.
Yep.
Because they will fall back in the field and interfere with other horses.
Yep.
We have two female jockeys. We have the wonderful, she used to be JB Carr, and I've been following her since Adelaide, who's now Jamie Mellum. And Rachel King, she's on Bjorn Baker's Arapahoe.
All right.
So you have, you know, more a mixed field. But you have to look at who can outlast everybody and who has the balance and the ride.
Yes. Keep talking, Cheryl. Keep talking. So you're not going to give us a tip, you're just telling us what we should be looking out for.
Looking out for, because until I can study, go through all the form tomorrow.
All right. Yeah. Tomorrow.
Monday. It's like you got to wait for the weather to work out what it's doing.
Yeah, so well, it's going to be going to be wet, I'm quite sure. There's rain,
yeah,
rain
it's
predicted.
Raining, yep.
So wet trackers, Caulfield Cup's a good guide. There's all sorts of things that, it's a real lot.
It is a very hard race.
Yeah.
It is really hard. There's so many factors.
Yeah, and
in a big race like that.
It's a long way. There's quite a few French horses. When I say there's French, a couple of French horses there, and they're from all over. Mostly,
well, the Frenches make very good stayers.
Yes, they do.
Chris Wallace had some reliable man, was a French, very good French stayer who unfortunately died. But the French make very good stayers.
Cheryl, thanks for your tips, and I'll ring you tomorrow. But thanks very much and good luck.
Talk to you afternoon. Okay. After I've had a little look at the fields on the tab.
Good on you. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. This is Cara in the Hunter Valley. What would we do without you? You're such an icon, Macca.
I don't know about that, Cara. I don't feel like an icon at the moment. There's junk all over my desk here. what's on your mind, Cara?
What's on my mind is the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, me too.
But I rang you 2 years ago. I saved a Christmas beetle. They're all disappearing, and I saved a Christmas beetle, and you were very interested in what I did 2 years ago.
Oh, we need to protect our little insects. We do, and little Christmas beetles. They disappeared, haven't they, Cara?
Well, I saved her. She came into my laundry upside down, and I saved her and fed her up for 9 days and then managed to release her again. So I'm pleased about that.
Okay. Now, have you got it? You follow the horses and especially the cup, do you?
I do follow the cup because I was born in St Kilda, although I live in the Hunter Valley now.
Mm.
And I just have a couple of – I know everyone's giving you chips, Macca. You know, it's probably giving you a headache.
No, it's not. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Well, it's meant to be raining at Flemington on Tuesday.
Yep.
So I have put a trifecta on Chevalier Rose, Flatten the Curve, Changing the Guards, whose father was the mighty Galileo, Changing the Curve. Changing the Guard, I beg your pardon, and Half Yours. So those four I put a trifecta on. But for you, I'm saying that Flatten the Curve will relish the wet track, seriously.
Yeah.
He recently won in America on the 30th of August. He won the Bowling Green Gold Cup in Kentucky. That's Flatten the Curve. And also Half Yours, which is ridden by Jamie Carr. She's now Jamie Mellon because she's married, that amazing girl jockey.
Yep.
And just won the Caulfield Cup a week or so ago on Half Yours. So that horse likes the wet track as well. So they're just my tips for you. I'm not experienced. I'm just...
Well, they're rippers. They're rippers. I love those.
But anyway, to anyone who's listening and to you and Lee, very good luck with the Melbourne Cup. It is the race that stops the nation, don't you think?
Oh, it is. And as an excuse, what about all the Milners who make little, you know, fascinators and hats dressed up and they go to the club or they just might have a little get-together somewhere at a restaurant or whatever, all over the place.
Marvellous. It's just absolutely marvellous,
It's a great time. It's just wonderful. Unfortunately, I find the Sydney papers, they've run this thing in opposition to Melbourne because it's beyond me. It's absolutely beyond me.
Well, we have to just ignore that. I did work for the London Times newspaper that had the only Australasian office in Newcastle when I was 19. But, just ignore the Sydney papers. Don't pay them any regard at all.
I don't, but I couldn't. I had to go out this morning and get them because time was you could get the Sunday papers at 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday
night. Yeah, that's right.
But I don't know that that's available anymore. I suppose they think you can go on your phone, but no, there's nothing like reading it and looking at it and looking at it and looking
at it. Absolutely. Look, agree with you. You're my sort of man, honestly. Agree with you totally.
Well, thanks for your tips. Let's follow them. I sort of like River of Stars. I don't know why, but maybe
well,
that.
See, I'm saying that I put Chevalier Rose. It's a boy though.
Yeah.
In my trifecta, that mystery trifecta, because my grandmother on my mother's side was born in Point Chevalier in New Zealand. So there we do all these funny things, don't we?
Sorry, Cara. I'll see you in the Hunter Valley sometime. Good luck.
Beautiful. Thank you. I'm sorry you're not coming to the Central Coast. Thank you, Macca. Bye bye.
Bye. This photo says Mel Black settles an argument. The poster is in the public toilets at the Brisbane Entertainment Centre in Brisbane, Boondall. I hope this settles any of your arguments, says Malcolm, who says he loves the show. And there's a sign there with a big snake on it. It says, beware of the snake. It's in the toilets. It says, beware of the snakes. So there is... Ah, dear. Dennis Taylor says, Macca, re-lamb prices, because if you were listening earlier this morning, we were talking about, amongst other things, lamb prices. Macca, someone's making money, $12 for three small lamb cutlets at the supermarket. Middleman somewhere. Big gap between farmers and consumers, says Dennis. And as to the website of the BOM, that's the Bureau of Meteorology, Macca, the recent changes to the BOM website and its saved bookmarks that we rely on for planning our work days, especially in construction and at this crucial time of the year with the storms, just shows how out of touch with the real world that the BOM, the Bureau of Meteorology, and another government department really is. Firstly, they defended the radical changes to their web pages, but they then had to eat their stubborn words and change it back to the original site. People power. Yet a great waste of public funds to develop the new site that wasn't really needed, says Terry on the Northern Rivers, where they've had, and Grafton Way, where they've had lots of storms and bits and pieces. This is from Kosala Harshanath. Kosi. G'day, Macca. Kosi here. Kosala. Call him Cozy. Cozy or Cozy? You might remember I sent you once an email entitled Sri Lankan Boy. I recently went back home to Sri Lanka and just like old times found myself tuning into you from 1 a.m. over there. Now I'm back in Brizzy with my dad, who's retired after 28 years as an aircraft engineer with Emirates. The two of us love listening to the show. It's become our Sunday morning ritual. For Dad especially, it's a real treat. He says it gives him the true Aussie vibe, hearing the stories, voices and spirit of all comers of this beautiful country. He often says what a privilege it is to live in such a wonderful, safe country. Hear, hear. So thank you, Macca, for keeping the genuine spirit alive every week. You make our Sundays feel a little more connected, from Brizzy to the bush and even all the way back to Sri Lanka, says Cozzy. Cozzy, thank you very much. And we'll put, well, I might put that letter on our website, but also we had KJ rang earlier this morning. You should have a listen to the podcast. We'll put it on the podcast too. KJ was, it's a lovely call. It should be required listening for everybody. Required listening. I hope you're enjoying them. I'm a bit, it's a bit, I didn't get a lot of sleep last night for one reason or another. I wasn't on the drink or anything. I was going to play that song on the punt because there's something about the races, and don't start with a gambling thing. Nobody gang. I don't gamble very much. Sometimes I have $5 on a horse or $10 on a horse that I like if I like the name. But it's a great time, and you know some people go to excess with punting, and there's other sides to it. But for most of us, we have a little flutter. We might go to the trots with a big group, and we say, "Oh look, we'll all have $2 on the." We'll have it on a quaddy or something like that. We just have fun. Have fun, 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 and get together. And the Melbourne Cup is one of those days. And you don't have to be in Melbourne to experience it, although going to the Melbourne Cup is really quite amazing. Like the girls in that little piece I played before. They're there. They were dressed up in their bath towels and whatever, yeah. Brian's on bribey. Is that right, Brian?
Yes, I'm on bribey, Macca, yes.
Tell me a story.
This is a story from way back in 1971. There was a group of us working in Victoria, mainly Kiwis, and we decided to go to the cup. And we walked into the cup and we had an esky full of champagne, an esky full of beer,
oh dear.
An esky full of Kentucky Fried Chicken, half a dozen rugs. And we just went out in front of the main stand, put the rugs down and had a ball.
Well, you would with an esky full of champagne and an esky full of chicken and an esky full of what else was there? Beer and
yep,
the whole deal. So, what were you doing in Melbourne, Brian?
We drilled a 3.5 mile tunnel under Arthur's Seat, which is down on the Mornington Peninsula.
Yeah,
and yes.
And what was in the tunnel? What? A road tunnel, rail, what?
Well, we had locomotives. It was a fairly big tunnel, and we run up and down the tunnels on locomotives. But it was for the Melbourne sewerage scheme.
I see. Well, a most important thing.
And yes.
You thought, what the heck? Let's take Tuesday off because it's a public holiday down there, isn't it?
Oh yes.
And so you just turned up at the cup. But you probably could you still do that now because there's too many people, isn't it? Was there many there that day in 71?
Oh, well, there was plenty of space on the green grass in front of the main stand, put it that way.
Because the day I went there, I think there was about 80,000 or something there. And, yeah, you probably couldn't just throw your blanket out and, you know, take some space up. I don't think. And do they still do that now? I don't know.
I wouldn't think so. But imagine trying to carry grog and food into the cup these days. Well, you'd never get through the front gate.
No. Well, you're banned. You can't take your own food in? No. You got to buy it there, have you?
Yeah.
Is that why they go in the car park? They go in the car park and have their things in the out of the boot and stuff.
Out of the back of the Rolls Royce and the Bentleys, yes, yes.
Oh, well, there's probably a few Toyotas and Corollas there and stuff, I'd say. Anyway, it's a great day, Brian. It's a great day.
Oh, I've loved race horsing all my life, and to go to the Melbourne Cup was special.
Yeah, well, you're from a great racing country, and your compatriots won a lot of Melbourne Cups with their horses, didn't they? Rising Fast, I think, was a great horse, yeah. And Farlap, all from the Shaky Isles.
Well, the funny thing was, my best mate, and we're still best mates, we've been best mates for 73 years, he said to me, who'd you back in the cup, Brian? I said, I'm not going to tell you. I said, anyway, they jumped. And I said, I backed best Kiwi horse in the race. And Dunk said, so did I. And Silver Knight bolted in.
You got a tip for Tuesday?
I backed Absurd at this stage. But, yeah.
Absurd, yeah. What price is Absurd?
$7 to 1. I think $6, $7 to 1 or something. Round about there.
Is he from New Zealand too? No.
Oh, don't think so.
No, he's not. He's from France.
Well, the thing is, yes, you beat me to it. You've got to watch these overseas raiders, the Poms and the French, bringing and the Japanese are bringing out some good horses.
Yes, of course. They come for the prestige. It's just, and see, a lot of people, you'd think if you wanted to get a horse, but a lot of people just want to get a horse in the cup so they can say, I've got a horse in the cup, even if it runs motherless, you know. But yes. That's the beauty of the whole day. And it's like that whether you're in a little restaurant or around at a friend's place enjoying the cup. And, yeah, it's a great day.
Well, this is it. Before they brought the Poms and then all these internationals out, the Kiwis won the cup 8 out of 10 times.
They did, yes. Well, they should have been banned. Good on you, Brian.
We all came over here to give Australia a handout.
Yeah. No, you came over here because you love it. You love us. It's the lucky country, as Chris Seed said. He's a former High Commissioner from New Zealand to Australia. He said, we came here, we love you, we love it here in Australia. He said, you're the lucky country, we just hope your luck doesn't run out.
Well, all I've got to say is I came to Bribey Island 29 years ago and went back to New Zealand, sold everything up, and I've been here ever since. Absolutely love it.
Good on you. That's absurd. Good on you, Brian. See you, mate.
Thanks.
Bye. Joan's on the line. Good morning, Joan.
Hi, it's Jan.
Jan
from Brookton, Western Australia.
Hi, Jan. How are you?
Macca, I'm ringing because we have had a perplexing situation happen here in our town. Mm. Two church bells, the Catholic Church and the St. Mark's bell, have the Anglican Church, has both bells went missing. And we're hoping that we can find them somewhere before they get something dastardly happens to them. We would like to think that they could be returned to the church towers, bell towers on
what
their poles.
What were the you're saying they've been thumped, been stolen?
Well,
you reckon?
They have been removed. I'm being very polite here.
And what were they? What were they made of?
Well, I would imagine they cast bell, a cast metal. Mm. The Anglican church bell's been hanging there for 130 years.
Oh, dear, isn't that a shame? Our friend.
And the Catholic bell's been hanging there for 70 years. Both been calling people, welcoming people to their buildings quite happily for many years, those years. So, but suddenly they've gone.
Are they worth a lot of money? I mean, is that the metal in them worth a lot of money? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not a scrap metal dealer, and that's our biggest worry, is that someone has taken them to melt them down for metal to make a buck.
Oh, dear.
But we're hoping not. We're hoping that they've been you know, that they've just been put safely somewhere for some... Maybe it's a joke. We don't know. We have been in contact with other country towns within strike of us to see if they had a similar thing happen to their bells, but so far their bells are safe. We're also alerting people to keep an eye on things like their cast metal bells, because if someone or someone is deciding that they are a way of making a fast buck, it means any brass metal plaque anything.
Well, everything.
Is a concern.
But you can't keep an eye on everything, can you, Jan? I mean, really, there's some sort of, I don't know, it's a manners and all sorts of, I don't know.
When you walk into the building and the bell tower's there, you don't actually look at it in the same way, you know, and when you do, and suddenly realise it's gone, the bells are gone, you go, oh my goodness.
We had a friend who's recently passed away, and his son still runs the business. His name was Peter Olds, and he's in Maryborough in Queensland. And he made stuff, and he made a couple of bells for a lovely old Second World War hospital ship called the Moreno. They cast some bells and stuff like that. You can probably get them made, but that's not the point. I mean, you know.
No, I mean, somebody has most probably gifted these bells to the church way back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly,
and,
Jan.
They're a gift to the community. Yeah. I mean, they used to be the locals.
It's goddamn depressing. Goddamn depressing. Jan, look, we'll see what happens and hopefully keep in touch. How's things in Brookton? Have you had a good season there?
Yes, it's turned around hugely since June from the cropping side of it, and we're looking forward to harvest.
Have you got a tip for the cup, Jan? And you get the cup early over there, don't you? It'll be on at about 12.
Oh, no, we get it late.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, we have to watch. Hold it. Your time frame.
You get it early.
Earlier than us. You're earlier than us. Sydney's 3 hours ahead of us now.
Yeah, but when the cups run at 3 o'clock here, it's 12 o'clock in.
Yes, lunchtime, midday. Yes.
So you get about lunchtime. Have you got a tip for the cup?
I haven't really been concentrating on it this year, so I'm sorry.
Well,
if there was a
horse called Bellringer or something like that, I don't know.
We'll put our money on it.
Not too much.
No.
Good on you, Jan. Good luck.
Thank you very much for the airtime.
Nice to talk to you.
Appreciate it. They can contact the Brookton Historical Society if anyone happens to see anything, or the police.
All right. Good on you.
Okay, thank you.
See you. Bye. G'day, this is Macca. Hello.
Good afternoon. It's Richard here.
Hi, Richard.
Yeah, I'm just up in far north Queensland heading to Melbourne. I'm an estate truck driver. And had a little bit of an early start with fog and absolutely lush up here. And we've got a great crop all the way down on the inland. I just wanted to have when you're talking about the Indian guy that where he was from with the cricket, I stopped in for a service station this morning, the most biggest grin on this guy. And I ended up buying a pie off him, and he was out scrubbing his service station, and a great chap. And everyone contributes comes here over the years. I did know last week that our population in September is we got the 1.25 million have come in the last 24 months. So it's that's about 600,000 a year, which is a fair amount. That's not counting the students. So there is a big crush for accommodation, and I sort of made a small joke with a guy at a truck stop where I was asking him about something, how you're living, mate. And I was in the truck. I basically live in the truck, motel room once a week, and 3 months I do that straight. Anyway, we come up with a term. We're not houseos or anything. We're wheelos. We're wheelies living in our bloody vehicles. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot. There's a lot of people living in their cars.
Yeah. Richard, what are you carrying? Yes. What do you carry?
Right now, I've got two big tractors. Each of them probably 5 ton each, big four-drive tractors that have served out their first life in far north Queensland. They're heading down to Windsor tidy up at a resale. At the back is a mine spec big four-drive truck. But Macca, on the way up, there's a lovely man by the name of Dave. He's overseas, and I bought up 2 6-wheel Studebakers, both identical, wrecks off Studebaker Army trucks, both built in the Lend-Lease program in 1945. They're about 300 chassis numbers apart. They come from down near Hay to up north of Cairns. The guys are collect.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Well, a bloke was taking this Alvis car.
I heard.
And they're worth a bit of money too.
He could have sat that up on top. I could have picked it up on the way through. And I actually had a fall the other night through, and that was just not quite misadventure. Just when all the coon cheese holes lines up, you fall through the crack, and that's what happened with me. That's a terminology generally in mining when you're doing your inductions. When all the wrong things line up, then that's when it happens. And, so I've had a bit of a fall, but I bounced. I'm nearly 60. Lastly, I know you've got to go.
Yeah.
I was at a marina yesterday and decided to buy a boat. It's cheap as chips. I walked inside and I thought, I'll have a cold beer while I'm waiting for the sales guy. Quick. And I looked up and I put I put $8 each way on a $46 or whatever it was. And it went to $61 and it won.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, you don't need to put up much money. And the other one with huge odds come in third. Favourite second. That's what you want to see.
Good on you, Rich. See ya.
See you, mate.
Bye.
Hello.
G'day, this is Macca. Quickly.
Hello.
Yes, g'day.
It's Joan speaking.
Hi, Joan.
From Skye, a suburb of Frankston.
Skye.
I went to the Derby yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I heard you speaking about it, and went with my daughter, went on the train from Seaford, had a wonderful time. The fashions were beautiful. The racing was great, and the beautiful gold bunny yellow roses that the head gardener had come on the radio yesterday morning speaking about them, and also roses, one named after Dame Elizabeth Murdoch. And I even managed to get a photo of, our Melbourne Cup lady winner, Michelle Payne.
Michelle Payne, yep.
I said to her, would you mind if, could I take a photo? And she said, of course you can.
Of course.
And beautiful young woman. And then my daughter and I were up at the top in the members, right up in the top, watching, Pride of Jenny.
Pride of Jenny.
Yeah, come home. And we...
One by lengths and lengths.
Oh, about 10 lengths.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were up there and before the turn, because we're so high up, my daughter said, oh, God, that horse is out a long way. And then all of a sudden gets to the bend and she said it's Pride of Jenny. And I think most people know the story of how she was named.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful, wonderful day. I've also through the years been to the Melbourne Cup. I'd love to go Tuesday, but it was a hectic day yesterday, and I'm in the bad part of 80s. I'm not sure the legs would make it on Tuesday.
Well, you've had
I would really love to go, but you never know. Sometimes I just make up my mind and decide I'm going.
And the clothes were great, eh, yesterday?
Beg your pardon?
The clothes were great on the ladies. Yesterday.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Oh, absolutely stunning. Lots of white, lots of black, you know, for being Derby Day colours.
Yeah.
No, it was just absolutely beautiful. And plus the weather. Doesn't the weather make it better?
Yeah, I think it's going to rain on Tuesday.
And it's
good on
it's another nice day today here in Melbourne.
Good on you, Jane. I've got to fly, but nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Ian. I've listened to you for years and I love it. I love your program.
Good on you. Thanks,
okay,
doll.
Thanks, and thanks for taking the call.
That's a pleasure.
Okay.
Bye.
Have a great day. Bye.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.